welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Daniel Dickinson at the United Nations in New York. Coming up in this week's programme, why women have the right to wear the controversial bikini bathing suit, and how much gender inequality in the labour market is costing sub-Saharan African countries. But first, time wasted collecting water is a double whammy for women and girls around the world. That's according to Sanjay Wijesekera, Chief of Water Sanitation and Hygiene Programmes at the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. He said that apart from losing time that could be spent in class, girls' health also suffers due to the hard physical labour involved. At World Water Week, which has been taking place in Stockholm, Sweden, UNICEF said that 200 million hours are spent each day collecting water. Sustainable Development Goal 6 calls for universal access to safe and affordable drinking water by 2030. Matthew Wells asked Mr. Wijesekera how many people lacked access today.
There are well over 600 million people who lack even a very basic level of drinking water, you know, not even a standpipe to which they can walk and collect water. If you take it as the SDGs do, a couple of notches higher, and actually say, well, you know, people shouldn't be walking long distances for water. Ideally, it should be on the plot, and it should be of a high level of reliability in terms of the quality, and it should be there whenever they require it. Then, of course, it's in fact a much higher number. So it is a complicated problem because it's to do with, you know, systems of governments to and their ability and capacity to deliver services. We know what the solutions are. I mean, technically, it isn't the most challenging.
Your data suggests this is a particular problem for women and girls.
That is correct. We know that approximately 70% of the time, it is women and girls who are doing the hard work. And it is incredibly hard work. I don't know whether, you know, you've tried carrying a bucket of water on your head, but over a long period of time, it is actually a major physical endeavor. But it's not just the physical aspect of it. Of course, particularly for girls, it takes away time that they would normally use going to school, attending school, or for women to do other very, very either productive activities or leisure activities. It's a double whammy because it affects the health of women and girls directly, but it also affects their ability to contribute and to earn money, which, as we know, is one of the major engines of growth and development.
Women should have the right to choose to wear a controversial bathing suit known as the bikini without coercion from the state or individuals. That's according to the UN agency focused on gender issues, UN Women. The bikini is a full-body swimsuit with a headscarf, which is favoured by many Muslim women and other non-Muslims. A ban on the clothing by a French town was overturned by the country's highest court recently, after photographs were taken of police confronting a woman and forcing her to remove part of her bikini. The French authorities said the woman's beachwear was inappropriate and a public order issue. I've been speaking to UN Women's Director of Policy, Purna Sen, and began by asking her for her reaction to the ban and its subsequent lifting.
Well, we were surprised to see a ban on women's choice of clothing, whether it's in public or private, and we're pleased to see the ban lifted. We hope that this will represent a better space in which women can control their bodies, how they adorn their bodies, and where they can go as a result of that, and what they can do.
So it's a question of individual freedoms.
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, women have the right to choose what they wear and where they wear it, subject to the same rules that everybody else has. Now, if somebody can wear a wetsuit on the beach, and if somebody can be covered up in Australia on the beach for protection from the sun, a bikini serves many of the same functions in terms of covering the body and protecting it. But the bigger question is that women should be able to choose how they present themselves without coercion from individuals or the state. And the bikini is clearly a chosen form of clothing for some women, and their ability to make that choice is something we must protect.
Do you think the state has no role whatsoever to play in an issue like this?
On whether somebody wears a bikini on the beach, I think that's very much in the matter of individual choice and respect and dignity of the people concerned making the choices.
From a French perspective, dozens of citizens have been murdered in recent months by Islamist extremists in the country. Do you not appreciate that there's a certain amount of sensitivity and that the French authorities have a right to decide this?
The French authorities have a duty to protect their citizens and to ensure they do the best by them and enhance their safety and security. It's rather tangential to be clear, and I don't think we are, that the denial of the right to wear a burkini is actually adding to national security. Infringements on people's rights and violations and mitigations of their rights are permissible only for public safety, for issues of public order. And we have no evidence that the wearing of a bikini has any association with terrorist activities or the safety of the public. So I think it's important that we disentangle those different issues and not rush headlong into the demonization of an entire people or an entire religion, but about certain actors in certain places who cause damage and bring harm, and not tar all people of a religion with that same brush.
Now, France's Prime Minister, Manuel Valls, has said that the bikini represents the enslavement of women. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I can talk about the enslavement of women as the denial of the right to go out of the home, the denial of the right to choose who they marry, whether and when and with whom they have children, being not allowed to go out of the house. But the specific clothing, I would not say is enslavement.
Perna Sen, Policy Director at UN Women. Gender inequality in the labour market cost sub-Saharan African countries more than $90 billion US dollars annually between 2010 and 2014. That finding comes in the latest African Human Development Report, which looks at efforts to accelerate women's empowerment on the continent. Launched by the UN Development Programme, UNDP, it details the high cost when women are not fully integrated into national economies. Deanne Penn has been speaking to UNDP chief economist Ayodele Odoshula. He began by explaining what human development means.
Human development is about increasing people's capabilities and choices to live the kind of life they will be proud to live. And there are three major indicators we always use for this. One, the issue of life expectancy, that's quality of health system. Two, the level of education that each person is expected to achieve in life. And at the same time, having access to decent income.
The report covers many areas where women's participation and empowerment is needed. It also highlights some areas of progress. Can you give us some examples?
It's true that there have been appreciable progress. For instance, when we talk in terms of political participation, we have countries like Rwanda being number one in the world. It's been number one in the world over the past 5 years. We have Senegal, we have Seychelles, and we have South Africa as the four countries among the top 10 countries that are leading the whole world in terms of number of women in national parliament. This is one of the areas which we thought is really great. It's one area of success that Africa is proud to have achieved.
Another area where there's been strides made, too, is in primary education. There's been near gender parity in enrollment of young children in school. The report also, you know, notes that there are shortfalls, not just in education, but maybe you can highlight where countries need to improve.
One of the major areas of impediment relates to the social dimension. There are a lot of social norms, institutional settings, and cultural practices that are still inhibiting progress in the area of human development. For instance, let's talk about early marriage. Early marriage is what is really, really constraining keeping our girls in schools after primary education. One major finding is that if you are able to reduce, for instance, adolescent birth rate by about 10%, it increases life expectancy by 9 months. So this is quite great, and we thought once we are able to invest heavily in addressing these social constraints, there will be accelerated progress not only in human development, but also in economic, social and political lives.
Deanne Penn speaking to UNDP chief economist Ayodele Odoshula. You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Daniel Dickinson.